Honourable members, goeiemôre, good morning, molweni. I think now is the time to start our meeting. I just have to welcome everybody, hoping that I'm audible because I'm not muted. Welcome the Minister of Public Enterprises, Mr. Pravin Gordhan. Welcome to the Deputy Minister and the DG. Welcome all of you honorable members who are members of this portfolio committee. We are meeting early this year, and the main reason, of course, why we have to meet early this year is for the department to sort of brief us. Because a lot of things has happened since we last met. Therefore, this provides an opportunity for the department to put us in the same wavelength with them in terms of understanding what has happened so that we don't rely and depend on the media. I think we are provided here an opportunity to follow all the events and developments since we met. I've also went through the presentation, though presentation is not necessarily the exact, it's more of a short writing, but it provides one at least a hint of issues that will be raised. I do appreciate that some of those updates are there. We are here to be briefed on the progress made in addressing challenges facing state-owned companies, update on the work of business rescue practitioners of SAA and SAA Express, update on companies that have not tabled annual reports, update on impact of COVID on the department and state-owned companies. That's the presentation we'll be receiving. Of course, there were complaints last night from members of this portfolio committee about the fact that they have not received the document in time. They received the document just 12 hours before. Mine is to just appeal to the department to just improve on that. It will be important if at least we are guaranteed a day or two so that we get an opportunity to get by 8:30 in the evening. Some of the members are already asleep. It will be very important at least to get it a bit earlier next time. Honorable members, we have to welcome a new member, and I hope he will be able to make himself visible. Honorable Nathi Dlamini from the African National Congress is a new member who will be coming to occupy the space left by late Honorable Mpumlwana. Let's welcome Honorable Dlamini. Honorable Dlamini, can you be seen on the screen? Just make yourself so that we have at least a picture of yourself on the screen. Also, honorable members, we have two apologies from Honorable Kwankwa and the Honorable Kumede. But before we give to the department to take us through, I wish them to also, when they deal with this Alexco, when they deal with Alexco, to also tell us about Mr. Hank Smith. I also receive a correspondence from Ms. Clark of DA, who has returned to us about us meeting Mr. Hank Smith. And I think also this will be happy if the department gave us, because he seemed to be claiming to be a community representative there. We will need to know whether they have been able to interact with them. What is the department is the take on such cases? I think we do have a plan as a portfolio committee of having an oversight trip to Alexco. And that will also provide us an opportunity to meet with all the stakeholders, including the community of that particular area. It's one of the things that are supposed to happen in the first term. Before I drag you with a lot of issues, honorable members, I will suggest that the department must take us through. Honorable DG, Mr. DG, can you come in, or perhaps we'll first try to get, as it normally happens, a briefing from the, or an overview from the minister?
Chair, before the minister.
Who's that?
Honorable Komani, Chair.
Honorable Komani?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Chair, and good morning to the minister and his crew and the colleagues. I would like to register the apology of Honorable Maotwe due to other portfolio committee obligations.
Okay. Thank you, Honorable Komani. Thank you, Honorable. Is there any, I think Honorable Komani helped me there. Is there any other apology besides the two and the third one that we received from Honorable Komani? Is there any other apology, Secretary?
Good morning, members and Chair. Those are the only ones so far, Chair, that you have mentioned, and the ones of Ms. Maotwe.
Okay. Thank you. Ms. Maotwe's apology is recorded. Thanks. Can we go to the the minister?
Good morning, Chair, and good morning to all of the members of the Portfolio Committee. Happy New Year, but although we already in the second month of 2021, and I trust that all of us have been reasonably safe and well, as the pandemic has created immense difficulties for many families, including members of parliament as well. I'm going to just make a few comments, Chair, and then hand over to the DG to make the presentation. The first is to state the obvious, as we can see in the evidence before the Zondo Commission, that malfeasance at the SOEs was quite rife in the years gone by. And yesterday, the previous chair of the inquiry into Eskom gave evidence on her experiences and the experiences of some of us who were part of the Portfolio Committee in 2017, in relation to the Eskom inquiry and the kind of intimidation that both she, the evidence leader, and others were confronted with at that time. So this is still an unfolding saga, and the department's responsibility in that context is to try to put right that which has gone wrong, together with boards, the management teams, and the staff of the various SOEs. In some instances, as you will see from the presentation, we've made good progress, although there's still a lot to do. In other instances, there's still a fair amount of work that needs to be done. The pandemic of corruption was then, of course, reinforced by the COVID pandemic since March last year, and it has had different impacts on different SOEs. So in the case of Transnet, as you've heard before in our presentations to the committee in 2020, there were numerous events that took place at the Cape Town port, at the Durban port, but all of that has settled down since then. And in other instances, because of lack of movement, lack of travel, there have been difficulties that some of the SOEs have been confronted with. But more importantly, the COVID pandemic, as the president and others have pointed out, has had a major impact on the economy. And in some instances, that has impacted upon the SOEs as well, particularly in relation to, for example, sale of electricity, or the amount of cargo that is being transported through Transnet's rail and port facilities, all of which, when we go through detailed presentations in the weeks to come, you will begin to appreciate some of the impact, although some of that was shared with you last year as well. We are also operating in a context where the fiscal constraints that the country faces are very evident, and the market constraints as far as the financial sector is concerned and access to finances for SOEs faces or presents its own set of challenges as well. And in the budget that the Minister of Finance will deliver later in February, you'll get an idea of some of the fiscal challenges that we face, but of course that's a worldwide phenomenon. It's not unique to South Africa, and every country in the world of a consequence, which has a consequential economy, is confronted with similar challenges in balancing the issues of saving lives and saving livelihoods as well. In some instances, you will notice that both SOEs and businesses have had to undergo adaptations to their business models, or are in the process of undertaking adaptations. And those will become evident as we go through the first quarter of this year as well. So what I want to emphasize are two things at the outset, Chair. The first is, this is just an overview. It's not a detailed account of each of the SOEs, but this is to kick off the year. And then as we work with yourself and the committee, we'll get each of the SOEs to give you more detailed updates as we get into February and March, depending on how you program these particular events. But the second factor is that there's a lot of misleading information that is out there in the public domain as well. It currently even affects the question of vaccines, and now you have the appearance of fake vaccine providers advertising vaccines for 150 rands, which are all dangerous, they're illegal. And so this is a kind of opportunism that you see taking place as far as people's health is concerned. But the same kind of phenomenon is also experienced in terms of the kind of misinformation that is being spread about one matter or the other. And as the DG goes through the presentation and we take questions from the committee, we'll make some of that clear as well. So let me reiterate that these are very difficult circumstances. And sometimes we think that trying to get SOEs right is often a thankless task because the road is a very difficult road. There are no easy answers. People tend to forget the history that we're coming from in relation to each of these institutions, although we're reminded of that history when we look into what is happening before the commission of Deputy Chief Justice Zondo. But nonetheless, both government and the boards and management of most of these entities are working extremely hard at getting the operational, financial, and other aspects of these businesses right. So with your consent, may I hand over to the chair, to the DG, and he'll quickly take you through the presentation, and then we'll avail ourselves to any questions that you have or any advice or comments that you wish to offer. Thank you very much.
DG, it's all yours.
Apologies, Chair. I was trying to get myself unmuted today. Good morning to the Chair. Good morning to honourable members, to the Minister, the Deputy Minister, colleagues and others from media and the rest of the public. The Minister has already covered the context. If I can just get these slides moving. What we are going to start with is ESCOM. Firstly, we just want to share some of the progress that we are making in turning around these entities. As everyone knows or remembers, in October 2019, the department published the ESCOM roadmap on how we are going to reform the electric supply industry and ensure a sustainable ESCOM in the process. And one of the major commitments that we have made is with regard to unbundling ESCOM into three sustainable businesses, with the transmission business being at the core of the restructured group. The Minister has approved the establishment of the transmission company in the next financial year. We should see progress towards establishing this as a legal entity. As we'll share later, good progress has been made with regard to establishment of management boards, appointment of critical executives at each of these three businesses, and starting to get and processes and other management systems in place to ensure three independent entities. The business is doing quite well with regard to reducing the cost base. It has set itself a target of 7.7 billion rands. It has achieved 10.7 billion rands towards that. And most of these savings have been realized in the primary energy space, as well as improving how the business is run and taking the costs out of its operations. Which there had been a commitment to sell off the ESCOM Finance company, which provides financial services to ESCOM employees. The sale is expected to be concluded by the end of this financial year, and it will help towards reducing the debt burden at the business. As you have indicated, critical executive positions are being filled, and also with regard to both Kusile and Midupi, getting the businesses the plants to be commissioned and get them commercially operational. That is going well. Kusile Unit 2 should achieve that status in October 2021. Apologies for that error. And on the electrification front, there is 86,000 connections that was achieved by Eskom distribution against the target of 85,000 that it had been set for this year end. With regard to the reliability of generation plant equipment, there's still a lot of work that needs to be done in that area. In the roadmap, we had set Eskom a target of 73% by the end of this financial year. They are currently at 65%, and one of the major areas that they are addressing is the unplanned outages and due to plant not being reliable for various reasons, aging fleet. There's some of the mid-life upgrades that should have been done at a particular point was not done. And also the, at some point in the past, funds were moved towards the capital program and away from maintenance. So we are paying the price for that. There is regular engagements between the department and Eskom to address this particular area with, of performance. As we have seen, it is leading to load shedding events, and which though the company had prepared South Africans to say, we are going to have this problem for the next couple of years, but we would like to see some improvement happening in the operation of the generation plants and getting that EAF up to 73%, as I've communicated. The Eskom has been implementing what they call reliability maintenance recovery to ensure that there is better planning for the outages as it relates to plant maintenance and the post plant maintenance events, that the plants are able to perform better, which is we found to be another area of concern. The ministerial task team has been quite involved in that particular area to ensure that that there is improvement, especially in the areas of procurement, to ensure that there is adequate space availability prior to these outages being planned. The partial load losses are being attended to. Boiler triplex, which have been perennial, also receiving particular attention, as well as the trips. Medupi and Kusile, for as we know, the way the challenge is how the projects were conceived. The planning was not adequate, and that has reflected in the build program itself. That these are receiving attention. On the emission side, driven by the commitments that the country has made to reducing greenhouse gases, there is a lot of work that has been done, especially in getting the older power stations off the lines, so to speak, and also in ensuring that there are mitigation technologies that are implemented on some of the newer power stations. As it has been communicated by others, including DMRE, there is a plans afoot to add additional generation capacity to our electric power system. That work has been done. There has been invitations for expressions of interest that have gone out, and the process run by DMRE is quite advanced in that regard. It's quite critical for Eskom because it will create the gap that is required for proper maintenance to be done, and to ensure that there's adequate buffer for unplanned maintenance events. Distribution and transmission, we do not speak much about this, but it's an area that will be getting quite a bit of challenge going forward. There is good improvements that we are seeing in the performance of the transmission system, but on the distribution side, there is quite a lot of attention that is required, not only by ESCOM, but also by municipalities where most of this network is basically managed from. And we have seen some of the events of load reductions, of illegal connections that are putting pressure on the systems and leading to some of the critical system components blowing up and getting communities cut off from the electricity system. There is a major challenge of the aged distribution networks and lack of maintenance at local level that requires attention. I've referred to illegal connections, the meter tampering, also illegal vending that we are seeing, vandalization of distribution networks, especially cable theft is an area of particular concern, and also the performance risks are increasing with the aging infrastructure. So it's an area that going forward with various stakeholders that needs to be attended to. The issue of arrear debt across the municipalities, as of the end of last year, we're sitting at about 35.3 billion rands that was owed by municipalities. There has been quite a lot of attention by ESCOM, especially with defaulting municipalities. And in some instances, these have led to the courts getting involved. But what it has done, it has led to an uptick in payments. There has been quite fruitful discussions that have been had with some of the municipalities which have sought ESCOM help in helping to manage their distribution system and improving collections. So that's one of the positives that has come out of that. There's been, I must say, very good, the discussions with the municipalities have been held in good spirit. Of course, the issue of the Soweto debt is an area that is of particular concern, especially considering 13.2 billion rands that is owed in that particular in that area, and the high incidences of equipment fail and vandalism in the area of Soweto is an area that we just want to highlight as well. The protest actions and the in some in cases, ESCOM employees getting caught up in these while they go about doing their work, especially in addressing illegal collections and ensuring that the system is not overloaded, is something that we need to highlight. The metering, including the need for prepaid meters to manage collections, is an area that has been met with resistance in certain communities. And as representatives of the people, we are also asking for your assistance in engaging with these communities to address this particular challenge. On the build program side, Chair, we are doing relatively well. As you can see at Medupi, five of the units have reached commercial operation. Unit one is intended to come online in April 2021. At Kusile, two of the units have reached commercial operation, and we have the rest of the units that will be coming on as reflected on there. As it is, I'll just go straight to the challenges. One of the areas that we need to address, obviously, the EAF per unit at this new station to address the issues of underperformance and there are defects, boiler defects that have been addressed, and that this should be achieved by 2023. And of course, there are costs associated with addressing these particular defects, and sitting at about 7.2 billion rands. And of course, we have had challenges with COVID-19 impacting on operations on these building sites, but they're good interventions by ourselves to assist ESCOM in this regard has helped, including bringing in experts that ordinarily would not have been able to come in due to restrictions. And of course, these employees on these sites are also resides within communities, so the incidences of positive cases in these communities have directly impacted on them and their availability. On unbundling, Chair, we have made a good progress, as I've indicated earlier. Some of the milestones that we can report on, the establishment of the three divisions was achieved in March. The organizational design and the implementation that has been achieved, the divisional financials are being reported, and some of the supporting systems have also been put in place. And also some of the commercial arrangements between the three businesses and the value in the electric supply value system are being put in place. About 8396 of the employees have been successfully relinked to each one of these particular divisions. If I can move on to Safcall, Chair. Safcall is a business whose product, the Solloc, is very much linked to the economic cycle. It supplies both the construction industry as well as the mining industry. And with the challenges that we have had, we know that especially the construction industry has been quite heavily hit. But despite those challenges, they were able in 2019-20 at their division in Mozambique to produce a profit after many years of reporting losses. There is an effort that's going on currently in the business to map a future strategic path for the business, number of scenarios that have been planned in that regard. And we are expecting to see this reflected in the corporate plan that is due in February 2021. Safcall leases its land from the Department of Environment, Forestry and Fisheries, and that there has been a backlog in the payment of that particular lease, and it related to the issue of what the lease rates should be sitting at, as historically the rates had been determined at about 5 rands per hectare, but they had to be brought to market rates, and as a result, what was owed to DEF had gone up to over 200 million, but there's now a settlement that has been agreed with DEF, and the first 30 million rands towards paying off that amount owed has been paid. And the Timber Dollar, which is a processing plant up in Venda, has for many years required to be upgraded to ensure reliable processing of timber, and there is a plan to upgrade that, and a service provider will be developing a plan to enable that has been appointed. This is a big milestone considering that for many years there seemed to be no traction there. But I must say the fact that you have a stable board as well as a full executive at this SOE starting to show the results. On the lumber side, I said that it has been depressed by the economy, but they have been able to supply the sawmills in their customer base, which is on the South African side, is mainly in Limpopo and Mpumalanga. Of course, there are challenges that are faced by the ASOM sawmill technology, both at its customers and obviously at its own processing plant in Timbadola, but that, as we have said, is receiving attention. And we have spoken to the good performance that IFLOMA has delivered. The stabilization in the leadership are starting to show good results from this particular business become obviously a lot more apparent as the business comes through to present its results to the portfolio committee. You've spoken about Timbadola and also some of the work that they have done internally. The Timbadola is spoken about, of course, the business in Mozambique has been directly affected by the cyclones in that area. There's 405 hectares that were lost due to Cyclone Shalan. And we've spoken about the lease rentals and that a solution has been found in relation to those. The land claims continue to pose a major risk to the business. Over 60% of the land is under land claims. How we manage those is important so that the land is not lost from forestry. There's good efforts that have been done by the policy department through the Forestry Master Plan to ensure that a role is carved for these communities as well so that they are included in the value chain of this particular sector. And there's some of the services, civiculture services that could be done by these particular communities we should see them being included through a proper plan. There are shares in some of the entities that were privatized by Safcol. The process of getting the first of these shares at the Siyaqhubeka, which is out in northern KwaZulu-Natal, to transfer to the communities involved is now unfolding. There's a plan that we have agreed with Safcol which has been presented to the cross-functional, cross-departmental task team to ensure that this transfer happens has been agreed. And of course, this goes beyond just the land claimants, the distribution of these shares. It also goes to the communities that are surrounding these plantations. Alesco Chair remains quite a challenged business. We have had to take action there to address some of the state capture legacies, including Scarlet Sky Investments, which we had been appointed as a sales and marketing arm of Alesco PSJV, we are pleased to announce that the Alesco has been able to get its own diamond marketing and sales license. Therefore, it does not have to go through third parties to be able to sell these its own diamonds. I understand that there could be a challenge, Chair, with the presentation not moving, but I can assure it is moving on my side here. And some of the actions that we have taken is management at the PSJV, that we have taken action against the CEOs directly implicated in the Kobalt report that was presented at the Zondo Commission, detailing some of the challenges that or rather some of the malfeasance that was being committed, including the very appointment of Scarlet Sky. This business was also impacted by COVID. Operations had to be halted so that the production in the first half of 2021 was not where we'd like it to be. In the second half of the year, we're expecting an improvement in output. The financial position of the business is not looking good, Chair. But the expectation on our side is there should be a plan that that can be implemented to save this business obviously in cooperation with the community, which is a part, has a part ownership in the mine. And on our side, we are also looking at how best the stake of government could be managed. We have engaged our counterparts at DMRE to see how SOMCO could assist in warehousing these particular shares. And in order to ensure that the very scarce cash that is in the business is preserved, and regrettably there has had to be some of the jobs have had to be cut, and in a community like Raggersveld is very much dependent on this particular operations, this was a very difficult decision to make. And these are the 80 jobs that have been cut. Going forward, we need to restore stability in the diamond operations. We need to ensure that we have a capable management team there that is able to identify and conclude proper partnerships to ensure that these operations continue, that the very few jobs that remain with the other operators like Transax and GPS having disappeared in this particular area, that those operations are, at least Alaska operations are retained. And of course, the one of the areas that we are having to address internally, and we hope to have a solution before the end of this financial year, is that we have not appointed a board. We have brought in an administrator. Unfortunately, had to depart during the course of the last year. So we have a temporary arrangement with the CEO, but we are attending to that because from the governance point of view, it is not the most optimal arrangement. One South African Airways chair, as everyone is aware, the business went into business rescue in December 2019, really as a culmination of many years of mismanagement and malfeasance that had taken root at the business. And what had happened there has been quite widely covered at the Zondo Commission. Everyone is also quite aware in November of 2019, we had what was an unfortunate strike, which did not help in building confidence in the business. Unfortunately, Nomsa and Saka also made certain statements during that period regarding the safety of operations at that particular business, and that invariably affects your forward bookings. And unfortunately, at this stage, they continue to be the parties that we are having to whose utterances in the public arena we are having to address. SAPA as well, the Pilots Association have not really been helpful. The one of the areas or one of the what we'll call the cash leaks that what were happening is the very exorbitant benefits and salaries that were extended to pilots over many years. These pilots are amongst the best paid in the world, and we have the figures to prove that. And during the business rescue process itself, at the creditors meeting, they also did not were not supportive of the effort, and unfortunately for them, the creditors saw that there was a good plan that had been put together. 86% of them said, we support the plan that the department and the business rescue practitioners have put together. We are now at a point, Chair, that there is 10.5 billion rands that has been made available to the business to implement that business rescue plan. We have made good strides in terms of appointment of the interim board, which is led by Mr. Geoffrey Kane, who is quite a seasoned executive who was previously headed the IDC. We are expecting during the course of this month that the business rescue practitioners should be exiting the business. We believe that progress towards restructuring of the business, including providing the cash to exit the employees that have chosen to take the VSPs and ensure a leaner structure going forward is achieved. That has been done. There is adequate funding provided to ensure that the creditors, the PCF creditors, can be paid. We have agreed to set up a receivership to take care of remaining liabilities, mainly linked to the concurrent creditors. So so we are now at a point where the board should also conclude its work in terms of getting an executive team in place and running this business going forward. So that's an expectation that has been formally communicated through to the BRPs and their plans to ensure that objective is met. The 10.5 of that 3.5 billion rands was made available in the latter part of the 2019, late November. In December, we are able to transfer funds about 1.5 billion of the 3.5 billion to ensure that people can be paid going into the festive season. The 3 months out of the 8 months that was owed was paid through to them. The length of time that the BR process has taken has been quite a concern. If you contrast that with Comair, where the process was executed along the lines of the 3 months that was called for in the Companies Act. So I think now that we are 13 months down the line, I think we are as a department, I think it's fair of us to call on this particular process now to be coming to an end. Of course, the cost of the DR process, including the fees that have been paid to consultants, has come out into the public arena. That is a concern to us as well. And of course, in due course, we are hoping that the BRPs will bring South Africans into their confidence as to where these funds have gone to. As things stand, as everyone knows, during VR, during business rescue, the business is totally in the control of the practitioners and they account to the courts. And I think it's important to emphasize this particular point that the shareholder, despite providing the capital for the restructuring of the business, really has minimal role in terms of determining who should be paid and what amount in the business. But there's continuous engagement with the BRPs to make our expectations known and to ensure that the early exit is achieved. We've spoken to the 10.5 chair, there is very active management of these funds to ensure that they are properly spent. There is regular reports that are required of the BRPs so that they can explain how the allocations are being spent. We are in a very difficult space as a result of COVID, and it has hit the aviation market a lot harder than other industries. We have 2020, with the numbers that we saw recently, the market dropped by 82%. So in 2020, we had 18% of the market that we had in 2019. That is the extent of it. And despite having had done some very deep cuts into SAA, where we have said that staff will be reduced from 4,600 to 1,000, which is just over 20% of the capacity that it had previously, there's still excess capacity in those plans. And between the board and the incoming executive, to see how those are managed. Of course, we have had Mango operating in this period to ensure that an essay related carrier is still out there in the market. It has also come up against some serious headwinds, and mainly driven by also the inability to due to legal impediments to ensure that the business is recapitalized. But there is a commitment to the from the BRPs to ensure that the process of ensuring some of the funds that have been made available do reach the subsidiaries. And we must say that the cooperation that we have received from some of the suppliers and partners of Mango is really commendable. And there is every intention on our side to ensure that going forward that the business does well by them. And of what we have seen, of course, in recent times, especially with what has become known as the South African variant of COVID, that some markets and some critical markets, international markets for South Africa, we have been cut off from those. So that's there's a lot of rethink and replanning that must be done on our side and that of SAA. Of course, in Jukon's ones, there is agreement as to when we will launch and what capacity will be put out there, the routes that will fly, that will be communicated through by SAA. What we have seen, Chair, is the emergence of cargo, not only on the continent, but across the world, especially driven by essential supplies such as pharmaceuticals, have been required, and that's an area that SAA needs to put particular focus going forward. Needs to be run as a lean and mean business in the future. In the previous attempts, at including the placement of freighters in the business, was not really done with with proper analysis and positioning. So we are expecting that the business to really come up with a better product and to ensure that that it is right-sized in terms of number of people that are located in that business. Chair, there are some number of labor issues that we are having to manage as we implement this business rescue plan. The regulating agreement, the termination thereof, it's very important that happens. It is an unaffordable, unsustainable, and frankly, very questionable agreement that was entered into between the pilots and the SAA in the dying years of the apartheid. It's a pity that it has been allowed to go on for as long as it has. There are new terms and conditions that have been formulated. Some of the unions have accepted these. We have the pilots is one of those that have not agreed to these, but the discussions are ongoing in that regard. There are new salary scales that the business has proposed, we are expecting that in due course there must be a settlement reached. At present, there is the pilots have been locked out of the business, and we are hoping that is sending through a message that the conditions that prevailed in the business in the past cannot be allowed to go into the new era, scupper this effort to ensure that a new airline is launched. And, Nomsa and Saka in court regarding the 8 months versus 3 months. And Chair, our case here is very clear. It's important that the little bit of capital that we have is preserved and that and the most of it goes towards building up new capital in the business or rather new capacity in the business. Right-sized capacity. So that's the basis on which we have stood against this. And what needs to be understood is that the business could not generate revenues literally from the end of April 2019 So the and his principle of called in supervening impossibility, which in those in the law area understand that very well, and that without the business having the capability and to be able to generate income, you know, it, in the interest of the future of the business, you cannot be expecting it to be paying for these sort of costs, which have not resulted in new revenues being created. We have agreed to put in place a social plan to address the fact that a lot of the people that will be leaving SAA will not be able to get jobs fairly soon. We need to put them in a position where they are able to acquire new skills, and also there is a psychosocial support that they must be given in that regard. They also come from communities. It's important that we are able to equip them to continue to play a productive role in those particular communities. We have partnered with Department of Labor, Department of Higher Education through their agencies, UIF, NSF, and TITA, to ensure that we also help some of those employees that would like to come back into the industry to retain their currency as pilots, as cabin crews, ground staff, and so on, because some of these roles require the people to be licensed. So there's a plan, there's a funding commitment that has been made by those agencies to help SAA in that regard. And we are hoping that some of these employees will go on into entrepreneurship and help to start new businesses that can create opportunities for others. So the arrears salaries, the 3 months of unpaid salaries amount to 600 million rands, and these for the months of June to August, and of course, as everyone is aware, in September the business was placed into care and maintenance, and that we had made a commitment to pay 2 months of salaries in the consultative forum that we had with the employees. We have added an extra month from the negotiations we had, which agreement was entered into chair the time with all the unions but the pilots, and NUMSA and SAC unfortunately came back and said no, they can't honor that particular agreement. And we had explained it from the point of having to preserve cash and that the business has not been generating enough revenues to honor commitment of 8 months. And, we also helped the business to apply for test COVID payments, 142 million rands was paid between March and October last year towards those number of employees reflected there from 1,500 in March to the peak of 4,500 in July 2020. So the voluntary servants packages, which was what was agreed with the employees, that it would be the way to right-size the organization, has gained good traction. We have 3,250 employees that have opted for the VSPs. 3,100 of those have been processed and accepted. We are expecting that on the 12th of February, the first tranche of payment to non-management employees should be made. The funds have been transferred to SAA, to the BRPs, the second tranche of to management and specialist employment categories should be paid by the 19th of February. And of course, for employees that have not been getting full salaries for the many months that I've referred to, this will come also as a great relief to them. And really, we have on our side been working throughout the festive period that we get to a point where this is possible. On the SCP front, Chair, to get a strategic equity partner, because that's the commitment that we had made, that the new airline shall have been injected with not only capital, but the skills, technology, to ensure it's a much more efficient and a sustainable airline. Of the 30 expressions of interest that we have received, we have been able to work through that with the transaction advisor that we had appointed. We have been able to come up with shortlisted SCPs for at both a group and subsidiary level. The board has been presented with this information, and jointly with them, we are working on how to take this particular process going forward. Of course, the board had come in at the tail end of that particular process, so they are having to work very hard to put themselves at the same level as the department on this particular. We are expecting that there should be a decision made by the end of this financial year. This is very critical because the further funding of this business, as we have committed, the working capital for the new airline, expecting the SAP partner to provide. The social plan that I referred to earlier, we have also within it agreed that we'll have a 10-year layoff scheme for those employees that would like to be kept current within the organization and be made and that as opportunities arise that they can be absorbed. We have created such a facility, if I may call it that, and engaging with Department of Labor as to how that could be put in place. It should run for about a year. There's various programs that we've identified that will form part of the train, not only for this group of employees, but those that will have departed either through VSP Section 189s as well. And the bursaries will also be made available. And the Department of Labor has also come to the party, as I indicated, through. They also have an entrepreneurship unit, which have pledged to work with us in this regard. As the Express Chair, as we know, is in provisional liquidation. The affairs of the business are being managed by these liquidators, these creditors. A committee that has been set up in line with legislation so that they are kept abreast of progress. The process has resulted in a buyer for the business being identified. A purchase price has been agreed, and that there is a bank guarantee facility that has had to be put in place by this preferred buyer. That process is running its course at the moment to ensure that that guarantee is in place. The business, the liquidator rather, will be back in court on the 28th of January for a further extension, and then we are expecting that in the next 3 months we'll be able to conclude the new shareholder structure for this business. It's a critical business, Chair, to be retained for the country at least because it served the secondary cities, which today some of these routes, including Bloemfontein, for instance, and Kibali, which were pioneered by S-Express, are now operated by some of the private sector players. There are many other secondary towns that need to be connected. So we are hoping these new players will be able to achieve that objective. And the great development here as well, Chair, is that this new buyer includes the ex-employees of SA Express. There is a the sale of the assets that was done through a public auction and the 24 million rands of assets were sold in the process. And that there is an amount of 25 million rands that will be recovered through once the bank guarantee is in place. Of course, what is critical is that these buyers need to meet the requirements of liquidators, where this business does not go into a full liquidation. The courts have agreed that a 417 and 418 inquiry should take place. There is an advocate, Siti Baza, that has been appointed by the Master of the High Court to conduct the inquiry. And this work has commenced on the 25th, from the 25th of September last year. So on the employee side, as we know, 691 employees were affected. Their contracts of service were suspended on the 29th of April. Some of the employees approached the Human Rights Commission to step in, we have met with the Human Rights Commission to help to clarify things here. We also were looking at a way of providing financial support to these employees. There are some legal impediments that we have come up against, as indicated there by the particular section of the Insolvency Act. The licenses of this airline have expired as per the date reflected there. We have engaged on our side the licensing board and the Department of Transport as well, just to help in ensuring that the preferred bidder, which is FlySax, is given an opportunity to be able to renew these particular routes or these permits and licenses at some point, so that this business can be allowed to fly again. So coming to Denel, Denel continues to be quite a troubled business, a lack of liquidity has not helped. Despite about 2.8 billion rands that was put into the business about 2 years ago. In this past financial year, there's been 576 million rands that has been put into the business. We have worked very hard to improve stakeholder perception of the business, especially in the defense community, and in the process help to unlock some of the support that are required at Denel. Requires. The department has led the effort as well in developing the Defence and Aerospace Master Plan that has been approved. Within this new plan, the role of Denel as a custodian of critical and strategic capabilities needs to be agreed, and most importantly, the funding plan for some of the capabilities that are critical in the maintenance deployed equipment in the SNDF, as well as development of new equipment going forward, becomes very important. Chair, where the business is sitting at the moment due to liquidity challenges, that only 30% of the capacity available is being deployed in this financial year. Revenues are 67% behind the corporate plan. The business is finding itself in a position where they cannot honor contractual obligations for payment of suppliers. And there's about 700 million rands of supplies or material that has been supplied that needs to be paid. employee salaries since April 2020 have not been paid. The unions have gone to court to address this situation. And of course, the business balance is a high fixed cost structure, including 240 million rands in interest payments projected for this particular financial year due to how we have opted to fund the business in the past. And the business is that it's expecting to be 26% revenues behind the 2020 financial year, so which is not a good picture. And the most troubling area is that we are losing very experienced engineers and development engineers to other countries. 200 of these employees have left. And quite a sizable number of those have made their way to the Middle East. Now, these are kind of capabilities that cannot be allowed to, we cannot allow them to be lost after having spent so many years developing them. We've spoken about the financial challenges, some of the operational challenges, leadership. The board is in the process of appointing a chief executive officer. This is going to be critical in mapping out a new pathway for this business going forward. We have also engaged other parts of government to look at how some of the products that are procured from by government in the security space could be rather sourced from Dinel going forward. There's been quite positive reception received on the on my counterpart at DOD, the Secretary of Defense, has been quite useful in this regard. We have, with COVID, the NCACC process has had some challenges that has impacted negatively on revenues, not only to Dinel, but the rest of industry, but this area is receiving attention. Transnet Chair is an epitome of what is possible if you have a stable board and a stable leadership. There's some creativity that's coming out of that business to address long-standing challenges, and it has its own challenges, especially some of the corridors being impacted by cable theft, for instance. Fuel theft, we know about it, and we have had some very scary incidents in recent times. The stakeholder engagements, including ourselves, including our minister, has been pulled into those to address some of the problems that were there in the on the freight logistics side of the business. There has been expedition of expediting, is the right word, of purchase of critical equipment, including straddle carriers, to improve efficiencies at the ports and also to help to improve congestion. There's a tracking booking system, and those that are from Durban know some of the challenges that were there at the port of Durban. The long backlog of trucks has been reduced quite substantially, which is very much welcome in that part of the of our country. The pillow paper trains have played a great role during this COVID period, and really we appreciate the effort that Transnet has put into that, and also the collaboration with other organs of state, including the security services, in addressing cable and petroleum theft. We have seen some of the syndicate players have found themselves behind bars as a result, and that's a great achievement to report. The TPT handled a record export of 900 refrigerated containers of citrus, which is 40% of what was compared to the previous record of 535. And that is a good achievement, I think, in those in the fresh produce market, because of the of the threat to the quality of the product. If there are logistic challenges, I would be happy to hear this this achievement that has been that has been attained, especially in the midst of COVID-19. Which is about that. Transit operations have been heavily impacted, Chair, by, as we'll report later, by COVID-19, including loss of lives. It's really at the ports, especially, that I think we should recognize, especially due to the essential role that they play, ensuring that critical supplies do come into the country during this difficult period. Rail volumes, Chair, have been hardly hit, and as a result of this, and especially across very critical categories of general freight, coal and iron, or the performance, Chair, there has been some recovery, but overall, including from the first lockdown to the second wave, there has been significant impact on the business. Vandalism, I've referred to, and the congestion, I've spoken to it. Also, there has been the weather events have been quite disruptive on operations. It's the sign of the times with climate change. Despite the good progress made in bringing new equipment, there continues to be lingering equipment failures, which management is attending to. So there are some interventions that Transnet has put in, the security of infrastructure. There is a particular strategy there with the security operators or security cluster to address that. Increased investment in the infrastructure and on the rail side to improve reliability of infrastructure that has been put in place. The office of the procurement office, as well as the DTIC, is being engaged with our assistance to address the high maintenance backlogs in the business, and this is mainly linked to some of the deviations that are required to ensure for single source procurement, especially when you're procuring for OEMs of those particular equipment. And that's an area that you need to ensure works a lot more efficiently than it has been. The investment in security system is also is addressing fuel theft. There is lessons and the adjustment to operations that are being undertaken as a result of COVID-19. And of course, I've spoken to some of the issues regarding to congestion at the ports of Durban. On the Chair, we are asked to report on the tabling of annual reports. So the progress has been made or not made there. SAA, as we know, has had prior to the business rescue, have not been in a position to produce an annual report and financial statements. And the last of these was in 2017 to 2018. So we, with the business emerging out of business rescue and the board taking, we're hoping definitely this must be one of the areas that must be addressed. There has to be an audit of the business to ensure that the board understands the baseline which they are taking over from the business, from the BRPs. And let's go, they had going concern challenges which the auditors had raised. And this is what had led to the delay in that particular area. But we are hoping that the report will be able to be finalized by the end of February. As I've called, there were challenges with the AG. The AG has been quite stretched. Chair, we have asked them to come into our entities, especially the major ones. due to the work the work that left a lot to be desired, but that was done by some of the previous auditors in that particular space. So now we have had the AGM was eventually held, and so the report should be making its way fairly soon to the portfolio committee for processing. As expressed, as we know, it's in provisional liquidation. As to whether it will become an SOC when it emerges from there will be determined by the process that the liquidator is undertaking. It's highly unlikely that the state will have a controlling interest post that process. On the impact of COVID-19, Chair, we referred to the huge impact that has been had by Transnet. They've lost 90 of their employees due to the pandemic. Denel has lost 4 employees. Eskom has lost 62 employees. And the picture as stands is we have about 3,500 employees at Transnet that are recovering, Denel 85 and Eskom 2,500. In the department itself, Chair, some of the measures that we've put in place, we have a steering committee that is managing the departmental response. We have allocated a budget of R1 million towards this effort to ensure provision of PPE, sanitizing of the building, as well as deep cleaning, especially whenever a positive case is picked up. We have also complied with the DPSA circular on managing the number of employees in the building. In terms of adjusted level 3, we need to have 50% of employees in the building. That does come with its challenges, we must say, Chair, but we are doing the best we can. There's been what you can say, it's been relatively low impact on the operation, because our operations, we can rely on remote working. Our department provides mainly a service, and most of that is a professional analysis of obviously of performance, ensuring that strategies put in place by the SOEs are appropriate. So in that regard, it's very much reliant on the professional capabilities of the staff. We have so far, Chair, we can report that we have not had any fatalities in the department as a result of COVID. Chair, I will hold there. Thank you so much.
Wow. Thank you, Mr. Khatatso Sakudi, the Director General of the Department of Public Enterprise. Now we will go to the members. I think this was a very comprehensive presentation by the department. I hope the members have been listening tentatively, and they will be in a position to engage this report. It's a long report, of course. We required it, we requested it, and now it's here in front of us. Let us engage the report, honorable members. I will start as I used to do with honorable. I've got the list here. I will start with the Honorable Mkhwanazi.
Thanks, Chairperson. Please allow me not to open the video because of the connection. I will not be clear. Honorable Chairperson, thank you very much. Greetings to the Minister, the Deputy Minister, honorable members, my colleagues, the DG and his team. Compliments of the new season as much as we've met in the last PC. Chairperson, I must first appreciate and acknowledge the presentation by the DG. It was very enlightening. Chair, I also appreciate the opening remarks by the minister. First, Chair, I hope I won't take long of your time. I have five comments or questions. My first comment to the minister is that, Minister, I hope one day we'll get enough time as this PC, maybe to allow you to take the PC on the, especially on the economic environment where SOEs are operating. I'm saying this, Minister, because I think, firstly, the PC and the Parliament and the public in general, they must appreciate the work that is being done now compared to the to all the damages that were done in the PC. I hope in the summary, you'll be able to just go through, but I just hope maybe with the arrangement of the portfolio committee will be given more time maybe to elaborate on that matter. For me, Chairperson, I think that space given can assist a lot, especially for the public and to really deal with all the negativities and all the not correct information that is out there in the public. Secondly, Chair, if the DG can, for me, present a plan if they have or talk to the plan of the department to deal with the issues raised by the Auditor General in the year 2020-2021, especially on the under Elokunjan expenditure. Thirdly, Chair, I note with the question that I'm raising, I do note that the minister indicated that there will be a time where the SOEs themselves, they will come before the portfolio committee to present details on the work that they are doing. I noted that. But Chair, my third question is to the department, to the DG, to say, can he talk to the ESCOM revenue laws vis-a-vis the reduction on the demand on electricity, but talk to the current situation that now there are many businesses that are open for businesses. Is there any hope to reduce that revenue loss? For the Chair, there are national treasurer's conditions on allocation as per a Special Appropriation Act. Are we making a progress, Minister, in those conditions? Conditions like managing municipal debt, coal contract renegotiation, and cost containment measures. Are we making any progress on those conditions by the National Treasurer? If the DG or the minister can talk to the issue of load shedding program plan, as the presentation presented by the DG is talking about the generation performance challenges. I'm not happy about the program dealing with those performance challenges. Maybe if they can talk to the load shedding program plan, and how the utilities addressing the high level of the unplanned breakdown and the maintenance plan. For now, Chair, can I stop there? I'll take the follow-up on the second round. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Mkwanazi. Can we have Honorable Katalia?
Thank you, Chair. Thanks for the presentation. I have a number of comments and questions. Let me begin with ESCOM, and I'll do it in that order. With regard to the divisionalization into three entities, generation, transmission, and distribution, I'd like to understand if this process can be fast-tracked and what, and secondly, what scope that opens the door to in terms of private sector involvement. If we could have clarity on these and an explanation for any delays in the timeline. With regard to Kusile, we hear about operational improvements, but we all know that Kusile has been at the forefront of the problems that we are currently facing, and we need to understand exactly what these issues are, how they're going to be met in particular, and at what cost. We understand that 7.2 million is allocated to new build now, dealing with issues there. Where is this money going to come from, and what is it going to be exactly spent on? These are important questions. Then there's the question of the procurement, which is stated of additional capacity from IPPs, but we are faced now with ESCOM asking to separate fixed and variable tariffs, which will result in additional financial burdens on IPPs, both companies and homes. Can we get clarity on this? With regard to SAFCO, there is clearly a very large backlog in lease payments, which has been stipulated in the presentation, and there's a desire to bring this to market rates. How will this affect the profitability, sustainability, and solvency of the company going forward? Another important question. With regards to AlexCo, we've heard about the malfeasance as regards Scarlet Sky. Can we have clarity on exactly what is being done to address these transgressions? The company is in administration, but and the community has had more or less no benefit from this in the past. So again, more clarity on exactly what is required to be done. With regards to SAA. Sorry, Mike. With regards to SAA, can I get some clarity in terms of the funding which is going to be post 10 billion rands funding, which is expected in June 2021? How much will this post 10 billion funding be? For what is it intended, from where will it come, and how is it justified? We need clarity as well on the racial allocations for jobs for pilots and other staff, and also clarity, please, is required on the strategic equity partner and the shortlist, which is leading to the decision which will be taken, as we understand it, at the end of 2021. With regards to SA Express, again, clarity on the identity of the buyer and the terms of the intended purchase and who these people are and how it will be funded. These are all important questions which have bedeviled us in the past, and we need to have clarity of them going forward. With regards to Danel, clarity is required on munitions and other contracts that might alleviate the situation, and we need to know how far this will go. if Denel is unable to honor, as the presentation says, current contractual obligations and is losing staff at the rate of knots, is this not indicative of a death spiral? So can we understand exactly what's going on there, and in terms of a clear financial statement of current or the current state of affairs and future scenarios? With regards to Transnet, we hear that there's now stable board and leadership, but three factors remain that I can discern. Clearly crumbling infrastructure, poor fuel security, and continued high costs of ports and rails, which is placing immense pressure in part on our roads. We need clarity on these three areas and how this is going to be met, given the reductions in volumes which will affect us. I've reflected many calls and asked for many issues to be clarified in terms of transparency, and I hope these will be affected. With regard to this, I have tabled a private member's bill that addresses the need for annual reports to be timeously presented, particular measures to be put in place to address the non-presentation of these reports. I trust that both the DG, the Minister, and the Portfolio Committee will agree with this, in my view, eminently sensible private member's bill. Can we understand if there is support for this? And finally, with regard to the answering of the various questions that have been posed, may I remind members of the Zondo Commission's very recent, Justice Zondo's remarks, unfavorable remarks on the non-completeness of answers to questions, both in the Portfolio Committee and in Parliament. And I trust that this will be noted. I thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Kashalia. Honorable Komani.
Thank you very much, Chair. Let me join the crew in welcoming the presentation from the department. And Chair, I would want to raise the serious concern that the department chose to oppose the application by the employees of SAA to court in respect of them saying they are preserving the capital at the expense of the salaries paid to the employees who have most of them lost their homes. They can hardly pay their school fees, and that's that it means their children would have a serious challenge on going to school. Again, Chair, in terms of Denel, having heard from the presentation that Denel is unable to honor its obligations, one would then ask the department, how does they anticipate the survival of Denel, and how is the department assisting in this regard? And then again, Chairperson, the next question would then be, what is the plan by the department to assist, particularly in the Denel that in the presentation itself says we are losing scarce skills in the sector? So how and what is the department doing to assist in this regard? Because we hope we should build a capacity within this state-owned entities that we should not be losing this much skills that we need so much. And Chair, in terms of Eskom, one would then ask to say, is there a load shedding plan, and what is the plan again for this unplanned electricity cut? Because it remains a challenge to the community members and everybody, because that is unplanned then, and it leaves everybody at with a challenge. Having said that, Chair, let me pause there, and then maybe I will have the second fight. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Honorable Komani. Honorable Piri.
Thanks, Chair. Greetings to colleagues, members of the portfolio, to the ministry, and administrators that are assisting us from Parliament, and greetings to the department. Chair, allow me to welcome the presentation as it was well detailed and more informative. I don't have much, but allow me to just have comments. Some are not the questions, but comments, and bear with my voice, Chair. I won't take long, because if I speak for a long time, I'll have a difficulty in breathing, but I'm fine. I'm well, colleagues. Let me start with SAA. Chair, I want the department to give us confidence in, because all these things that we are raising, they've noted them, as already acknowledged, especially on the business rescue progress. I wanted to check when are they, we are expecting exactly the exit plan of the BRs, BRPs to exit the airline. When will they give us an exit plan or a proper final report to say we have done our work, this is where you are supposed to go, and we did well. At the same time, Chair, as the public knowledge, it's anticipated that a lot of chunk of money is being used to pay the BRPs. Can we be finished as a committee with the expenditure report specifically or on them, the cost that we are paying the BRPs, and really the justification of the money, so that it must not be like we really don't care what is happening there. I think it will be proper to, in the next meeting, to get a well-detailed cost of what is happening in particular with the BRPs. Secondly, while we are still on the SAA, there's an appointment of an interim board. So my question, Chairperson, is that since they've been appointed, did they meet or have they sat down and made a proper plan to say this will be our focus area in terms of assisting the airline to its proper plans, where it wants to go? So it will be very much pleasing if even the board, the interim board, one day could come and appear to us and tell us what is their plans, because also it implicates financial implications. So I believe we need to be finished or to be given an opportunity to meet with the interim board. They must tell us their plans, what is it that they are looking at, in general, their scope of work. In terms of ECHO, my colleagues who have raised number of issues, especially in losing the 200, more than the approximately anticipated 200 employees, which is we are losing the capacity, the skills, and you know, things that we need as a country for the entity to work in a proper way. But then also is to say, what is the plan to rescue the entity? Are we waiting for the entity as well to go the same route as SAA and SAA Express until we reach a point where we say, all of us, let us wake up and assist, or we are just relaxing? I know the ministry and the department, as you play your oversight, but I think we are not doing much well, as much as we are we're just talking and realizing and acknowledging the weaknesses that are happening and the threats, but we are not acting. You know, the most important part is the implementation part. We've got proper strategy, you know, turnaround strategies, but I think we are not doing justice in implementing them, because all these other entities that we are observing, they are going the same route that already SA Express is in, SAA is in, but then why can't we rescue that thing before it escalates and goes worse? Chair, lastly, in terms of Transnet, even previous years, since we started to be members of this portfolio, we've been talking about theft and vandalism of cables in Transnet, the entire country. And today it is so disappointing to get a report that there's an increase. While you displayed the table to say what is it that you are doing, but I think also at the same time, you keep on investigating, but there's no proper plan to stop that and avoid. Are we waiting for those copper cables to be stalled until they are no more, or what? Because we could hear from outside to say it's all about copper and all the stuff, then you'll replace it with aluminium. So you're waiting for people who are stealing to take the whole copper, then you can stop it, or what? You've got nice and proper plans, but implementation, it's not there, Chair. Let me pause. Maybe I'll come back next time. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Piri. Now we have to ask Honorable Inkosi Buthelezi. Honorable Buthelezi, I think I saw you in the list. Okay. While Honorable Buthelezi seemed to not responding, can we go to Honorable Clark?
Thank you, Chairperson. Just a few comments, being a new member on this committee. I do have to support my colleague, Kachalia, MP Kachalia, 100% around a bill that needs to be passed in Parliament in terms of annual reports. I find it quite shocking that all these departments of public enterprise lack producing their annual reports. I also would like to have a clear program from you, Chairperson, as to how we, as this committee, MPs on this committee, are going to act out our constitutional obligations in terms of state capture, fraud and corruption around all our departments, and what program will be instituted in order to follow suit. In terms of Alex Corr, I would like to see a full report as to what percentage of diamonds have been mined over periods of time, because the narrative says that there's only 10% of diamonds have been mined, and it would be very interesting to see that full report. MP Kachalia has covered the Scarlet Sky investment issue, and I look forward to when they appear at the committee to see whether their annual reports have been finalised and presented to us. I'm also happy to hear, Chairperson, that we will be meeting when we do our oversight with the Richtervelt community, and to get their full issues in terms of Alex Corr. Then in terms of Denel, I would ask that that the 1.8 billion rand that has been made available to Denel in recapitalization, in their recapitalization fund, and to improve their solvency position, if we could have a full report as what they intend doing in terms of that, and how they would follow suit. Also, you know, what programs will government put in place to retain critical skills? And I think that stretches across board in every every scenario of government. You know, we're losing our critical skills, and what collaborations do we intend putting in place with private sector as well as government, and to ensure that we retain our critical skills so that we can prevent our departments from declining in the manner that is happening at the moment. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Clark. Honourable Dlamini. Honourable Dlamini, Nathi Dlamini.
Thanks, leadership. Hello?
Yes, you are audible, but there is a noise a bit. Can you be in a position where there is no noise behind you, Honourable Dlamini?
I think it's the network or something.
Okay. Just continue.
The noise still there. Yeah. No, thanks, Chair. I think mine is mostly about the load shedding. In terms of the plan going forward, but that question has been covered. And the skills loss at DENEL as well. Is there something that we maybe we can do to ensure that we retain those skills? Because engineers are very tough skills to come by. And three, the issue of Kusile and Midupi. It from an engineering point of view, I must however confess, I'm not an engineering person. I'm from a social sciences background, but I understand that the issue of design can either make you to pass for failure degree. Now we have a situation at Eskom with Midupi and Kusile where construction started and there are still design challenges. How did this thing get approved, if I may ask? Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Dlamini. Honorable Malinga.
Good morning, Chairperson. Greetings to the Minister, the DM, the department is led by the DG, colleagues in the meeting, Bongpila, Chair. Chairperson, I think most of my points have been covered, but I want to zoom in to municipal debt under ESCOM. Chairperson, I want to check if there are any bilaterals between ESCOM and COPTA in terms of the municipalities that are defaulting in honoring their debts with ESCOM without ESCOM or COPTA withholding equitable shares that is allocated to municipalities. Chairperson, I also want to drum in the issue of Kusile and Midupi, because these power plants were built to ensure that we have stable energy supply in the country. But the slide that the DG has just presented, that there are still defects in Kusile, and I hear that they still need an amount in the tune of 7.2 billion rands. Will these 2.2 billion rands ensure that all the defects that are being picked up are going to be resolved and we have a stable energy in the stable energy supply in the country? Chairperson, let me commend the department or the SOC Transnet, especially on their last bullet on slide 43. But Chair, I would want the DG or the minister, when they come in, to also further clarify bullet number 6 in terms of who are they working with, because it's not enough to say that they are working with some companies to cap the issue of cable theft. What is the plan in place to deal with this one, Chair? Chairperson, SAA is all over the news. I know that NUMSA is taking chances. They like media. We are not saying it's okay not to pay employees, Chair, but can we check how far and how truthful is what is portrayed in the media, Chairperson? Also, Chair, that the department should ensure, I think it's slide 29 in terms of VSPs, that they ensure that the timelines that are put there, they are met, and we don't have a challenge again that people who volunteer to take severance packages are no longer paid on the 12th, because the 12th is just around the corner, that they ensure that that comes to fruition. Let me stop there for now, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Malinga. The last person on my list will be Honorable Shabalala.
Thank you so much, Chair, and good morning to everybody, to the ministry and colleagues, and of course the department led by the DG. Chair, I want to pick the minister's views on this matter. Firstly, we must all agree, as this public enterprise portfolio committee, we are as important to the economy of our country. And now the matters emanating from the Zondo Commission, I have a question and to want to hear what the minister and what is the plan of the department in relation to that, so that it also comes to ourselves. Because there must be all of us must be held accountable, but also have some level of responsibility to what happens in the Zondo Commission in relation to the public funds. Now, the question is, Minister, are we doing anything as the department in terms of tracing what comes out of that? And I'll make a typical example on matters where matters of finances or procurement has been mentioned, malfeasance and corruption of any sort, especially in entities, if not the department, where those officials, be it in an accounting way, are still in the employ of those entities or in the employ of the department. Is there any way, any tool that we are using to track those matters and attend to them? We understand the process of Zondo Commission such that we will get a report. Now, we will agree that it was been said that we don't have to wait necessarily for the report. However, when matters of criminality are, they need to be ensued. So I want to know, as the department, what is it that you are doing to track, and is there any particular focus, be it persons deployed to do that? And I will align it to ourselves and bring this matter back to the committee. And I will submit to this committee through its own research capacity at Chairperson and the content advisor, including the legal advisor we're supposed to have, is that we need to find a way where our officials, as well as the public enterprise, to be able to track matters and align them to the current issues we are dealing with, so that even if we are doing this oversight, but we are able to also be guided, so that we don't look like a committee that starts afresh, but we are a committee that continues with matters, but that is able to bring some resolutions to some of the challenges that we would be experiencing. So that's one, Minister. Chairperson, while I'm at it, I want to know to the department around the ESCOM. Now, you know, the question I asked oneself was that, what is the impact does ESCOM problems necessarily have on the economy? And have we fully embraced ourselves? And ultimately, that impact on our economy, it becomes multifold. And I mean, firstly, the leading provider of jobs that is embattled with labor market. Secondly, the domestic industrial growth is dependent upon the energy resources delivered by the company. So the question that comes is that, how much money does ESCOM load shedding has wiped off the economy? And I will tell you, from 2019, and research was such that load shedding has reduced our GDP growth further to 0.30% in 2019, and this translates to 8.5 billion of real inflation adjusted rents. So I want to find out, in this current financial year, have we done that, and do we bother ourselves when we sit at ESCOM and we attend to these challenges that we have, but to also think about these matters. You know, at some point I did ask DG a simple question, and he gave me a simple answer about why are you doing load shedding? And the simple answer, of course, was to make sure that the demand. Now, this load shedding becomes a serious a problem, and it impacts on the business. And we know in this adjusted level three that businesses have been opened. But now the question is, they're going to face that loss of profit. In some cases, a large loss of businesses cannot keep up with their employees or be present during a power outage. Essentially, they will be paying a non-worker. And we know what they've been facing. The question becomes that, how are we mitigating this load shedding vis-a-vis the reasons you finished us due to maintenance? We cannot keep on the rhetoric forever. And I would move to this portfolio committee. When we engage with such matters, especially on ESCOM, I think it's important to also, Minister, to invite from our part and your part, the CEO of ESCOM. I mean, if persons are really getting, they're employed and they are earning such salaries, a big month and so forth, it is important that you don't only bear the brunt of only responding to these questions, but there are persons that are responsible on day to day. I think it's important that we need to bring them closer. Now, let me move to the Alex call. You know, you mentioned that the diamond mining sales license, and there's no more need for a third party, and you're saying perhaps we must envisage something else. But at this, what you're saying is that we have obtained the marketing license. We can only hope for the best. The question is, and when did we get that? Secondly, this committee has made it very clear categorically around the laws, if not the amounts we're paying for the head office of Alex Kowe, it's situated in Pretoria. We were told, yes, there is process, it's moving. We want to be clear and get it very thorough from yourselves that has the Pretoria office, what is the Pretoria office status currently as we are speaking? Has it relocated? If yes, where is it housed? And what is the staff complement, and how are they reporting for duty? Given the relocation, it was clear that it needs to be closer to where Alex Kowe is at, where the mines are being in the Alexander Bay community. So what is the relocation and implication on the human resources? And you would understand where I'm coming from. Perhaps so people are coming, others from Gauteng and all sorts of areas in South Africa. But when you relocate them, there's a cost associated with it. So I want to know and get the numbers. And if it is not relocated, how much to date are we paying for that rental? How much is the cost? And when is the lease coming to an end? And just to get a contractual understanding of this lease to date. And how many personnel to date are reporting for duty, Deputy Minister? Let me immediately come to the private members bill that Honorable Kachala speaks on, and his colleague, our colleague, of course, that supports it. We must be very clear as this portfolio committee that we understand, and we've seen this since we got into our second quarter of this portfolio around matters of bid now, as it reported, it's self-called Denel and Alesco, its failure to really table its annual report. Let us be clear on the process. I mean, if ministry is unable to do that, it writes to the leader of government, this in this case is the deputy president, and there's a letter also that goes to the speaker of the National Assembly to explain that, and that letter comes to the portfolio committee for us to get the response of the speaker, and it becomes even ATC. Now, when that has not happened, I think it's only fair from our side as this portfolio committee, one, perhaps to also write and take a decision to write a letter to the speaker that says to the speaker, we have noticed that the AP, tabling of annual reports in this current financial and the last financial year has not ensued in this portfolio committee. Therefore, we request a legal advice specifically on the non-compliance insofar from the part of the department, but also from our part as the portfolio committee that is responsible to go to parliament and pass budget and also have reports around the APP and the strat plans. What becomes the implication around just that cycle? So it's important for us to ask the speaker to give us a legal advice, of course, to this portfolio committee is able to advise us further. Before we can jump the gun and run to tabling private members' bill, we should not, as much as it's open for us as members, when we can't get answers or we are posed questions and you feel as a member you're not satisfied, immediately you resort to the latter. And for me, private members' bill, I mean, it's important things that we want to table, but things are not out of hand currently because the minister is here, the department is here, it's always coming before us, they're giving us the report. It's only fair that we exhaust, Chairperson, the avenues and the clarity that we need to have prior we entertain a private member's bill, of which we cannot even stop because it's upon the member's right. So if Honorable Kachalia wants to do it, it is the right as a private member. When that bill, it will come to us ultimately, then that's when we can discuss it. But it's not for us to say, I table a private member's bill, can I get your support? It doesn't work that way. Surely you should have got a better advice. So my submission will be, let's write a letter to the Speaker of the National Assembly and really get the understanding. DG, the COVID-19 on the report speaks about the only account on, we want to say, may the souls of those who have departed rest in peace during this pandemic around people, personnel that we have lost, those ones who have been affected or infected by the virus and measures that we have done to make sure that lives are spared. However, I think from my side, we are also interested, DG, to understand that when you say you've done all these measures around the circular of DPSA and sanitizers, procurements, fumigations, all those protocols, it doesn't end there. I feel from a financial point of view, can we really get as much as you have said to us, you've set aside 1 million to make sure that you're able to deal with these protocols. We want to know how is it spent to date, exactly to the crunch numbers. We have seen, members, that the PPE saga and what happened, overpricing and all sorts of things. So we cannot wait anymore and just hear this has happened. Can we get the accounting of whether that 1 million, and it's not only for the department, we said it before, we wanted to find out also other entities during COVID-19, what has been the expenditure cost around just securing what's important, be those sanitizers, the PPEs and so forth. Can we get those breakdowns and understand how has it been spent so that we don't read on media and have egg on our faces? Let's be proactive and get this report. The FAA, Chairperson, the business rescue process, and I feel, and the DG says to us that, of course, the BRP, whether the consultants they've used and how they utilize the funds, were only persons that really give the funding. Now, how do you give a funding that you don't have control and some accounting to? Now, immediately takes us to the legislation around the Companies Act. And I think for this portfolio committee, and we do have a schedule in our program where we're going to engage the DTI, this is part of the issue that we need to bring right on top of our list so that we're able to deal with the inefficiencies of it. Because we cannot allocate public funds, the next thing we don't have control or some overseeing or accountability on it. It's really unfair. The question is, to date, DG, how much have we really given the BRPs as allocated to them that they have utilized. And I'm sure you would know from your balance sheet how much you would pay the persons. Just that overall figure today. So that we know how much the public funds is really funding the BRP. And the board minister in the report it says you have appointed a temporary interim board. What has been the period? What is the period of this appointment? And what is the cost of it? And when is it that you envisage to have a permanent board? Furthermore, what is the relationship now with this board, with the BRP? How are they meeting? And what are the agreements or disagreements? I want to understand in terms of operations, how are they operating while the BRP is doing something else? We've got now an interim board. Coupled to that, you are saying the interim board already, you've done the shortlisting around the equity partner and you have given the board for consideration. Can this process be transparent? Who are this private equity partner and this shortlisting that would have done the considerations around them? And we don't want to co-govern with yourselves in terms of your own responsibilities. But I think transparency is really important. The BRPs, can they confirm outstanding activities? Exactly what is left for them to do? And the issue of the BRP plan implementation with the meeting of the board, as you said, that there was a meeting with the board by the 29th of January. I'm sorry I might miss issues there, but there is something around that that has been said. And let me leave it there, Chairperson. Safe to say that we welcome our new member, Honorable Dlamini, that has spoken. We're looking forward to a fruitful engagement and learning from each other, Chairperson. And thank you so much for the opportunity.
Thank you, Honorable Member, Honorable Shabalala. Honorable members, I think you would have seen that I didn't give allocated a particular time for the department to present, and I allowed the department, because I've seen the report that is very long, it's very comprehensive. It covers a lot of our expectations, and that's why I allowed them to take more than an hour in their presentation. However, now we tended to compete with them in our seeking of clarity and questions. We also took almost close to the same time that was made by them when they were doing presentation. Therefore, I'm saying that because some members, they will speak and take their 15, 10 minutes, and after that, say they will come back for the second bite, you know. And looking at the time now and the long questions you have asked, I doubt if by 1 o'clock we'll have still an opportunity to give honorable members another opportunity for a second bite. Therefore, we must just acknowledge that possibility. For now, we'll have to give, just to say from my side, so that when the department speak, I don't have to say anything. To me, honorable members, this is one of the most comprehensive report since I become the chair of this committee presented to this portfolio committee. And I also want to appreciate the work done. There is a lot of things that are positive that came out in this presentation, including Eskom having saved costs and even beat the target of 7.7 billion. and he came up with 10.7 billion. To me, that's a very important thing to highlight on the report. Of course, there are challenges that still need to be, but still also on ESCOM, there is something that they have not brag about, that I would like to brag about as a chairperson, was it's very important for this portfolio, especially for ESCOM. The Special Investigation Unit last year, towards the end of last year, was on news having recovered an amount of 1.56 billion rand from a company called APP South Africa on an unlawful contract awarded through corrupt means for work done at Kusile. That to me is one of the very important areas that we cannot ignore, though of course it's not directly to do with the department, but the department contributed in terms of information and other assistance that the Special Investigation Unit might have needed in order to follow on that. Therefore, that also is a good money in the light of the challenges that we have in ESCOM. And we would like this to be deepened. We would like also to see, while we are watching on what is happening, what is important is that while people are continuing going to Zondo, you know, but we must also see some kind of work in terms of people being arrested, in terms of companies that have been able to get business unlawfully just being taken into account. This is a good example for me that has been highlighted here. Without going further, I would like, because I don't want us to give the department to respond, because we still want a lot of information as far as the questions that came here. Can we get the department? I'm sure the minister will lead the department as normal. Thank you, Honorable Minister.
Thank you, Chair. And thanks for reminding us about the 1.5 billion rands recovered from ABB. What I'm going to do is request the DG and the Deputy Minister to cover Alexcor, SA Express, and Safcol matters, and then I'll come back after that and cover the rest. So with your consent, if they could cover those questions, please.
Thank you. Thank you, Minister.
Do you want to go first or should I go?
Just proceed, I'll come back to you.
All right. So let me start by addressing the question on the headquarters of Alexco. Alexco has had to cut down on staff at the head office due to constrained financial situation. Getting out of the lease of the headquarters has proven to be a lot more of a challenge. We have two members of staff remaining at headquarters, and that is the CEO with an admin person. The plan definitely still is to consolidate the draft of fault. The lease will be right coming to an end on the 21st of August, 2021, and it is at about 120,000 rand per month. So there's no intention to renew that lease, Chair, and the business then should be in a position to move to the doctor's fault. With regard to the marketing sales a contract that has been in place since that has been since November 2020, Chair, and as we have indicated, the business should be able to now bring its own is now bringing its own diamonds to the market without intermediaries. Yeah. The member Clark asked about the diamonds that have been taken out of out of Alexco over many years, since 1928. We'll see what we can do in answering that question. But what we can say to her is that the land mining operations diamonds have almost been depleted in that area. There's been there was an effort in the last 3 years to do further exploration on land. They do not produce great results in terms of new deposits, though there are still some operations happening in that space. The area that remains that still has a lot of problems is on the marine side, especially in the medium as well as deep waters. That's an area that has shown a lot of problems. The last time we had a contractor operating in deep waters, we were able to average about 10,000 carats per month from that area. So our expectation is that is an area that will be with the mid waters that will be receiving a lot of attention. I want to point out with regard to the community, the chair had asked about Hank Smith. He's a lawyer representing a portion of the community. The community structures under the CPA chair remain under administration by the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform. That was as a product of the dysfunctionality that had engulfed those structures, which is another unique problem. We're seeing it all across the country, that the CPAs are not working as well as they should, and they are quite prone to factional battles, and resources allocated to them are not always used in the best interests of communities. Honorable Kachali had asked the question around ASCO, SAFCOL and its sustainability. That has to be a product of a product diversification. The SOLOC, having a single product line of SOLOC has not proven to be quite good for the business. It makes it very much prone to the economic cycles. In the current financial year with COVID, we are in a position where the business could not recover its full costs. So there's an area that the new CEO, not so, you know, there's 2 years now, in there, has been putting quite a lot of effort into with cooperation of our partners to develop a new product line. The question on Scarlet Sky, exactly what is being done, we have a report that we have tabled at Zondo. We have a unit in the department chair which is tracking all the forensic reports that have been produced at our entities to ensure that where criminal action should be taken, it is taken. They are working very closely with the SIU to ensure where there are proclamations. Those are being implemented. There are opportunities for new proclamations that they help the SOEs in obtaining those. So the same would apply to Scarlet Sky, where that appropriate action will be taken in due course. On the question of S-Express and who the buyer is and what are the terms of this, we have rebuilt it's a FlySex consortium which has some of the employees in there. There's also former operators of maybe we had a low-cost airline that was operating local on the local front. The name just escapes me. Maybe Nani will be able to help us out with the name there. And they also have one of the one of their funders is one of the reputable institutions. Yeah, and even an appropriate time, the liquidator should be able to come here and share the information on who those are and what is the terms of sale of shares in that particular entity. I'm just getting my notes, Chair, to pick up any other questions that I could have missed on the Express. Chair, I don't want to, for now, Chair, let me stop there. Let me just say on the question from Honorable Chabalala regarding our spending on COVID, the 1 million rands is being closely managed. I can assure you on that, and we're quite happy to share how that expenditure has been utilized by the department. We scrutinize any quotations we get in terms of deep cleaning, for instance. We have been able to drive that figure down to about 11,000 rands per floor, where we are able to do some of the cleaning through our internal cleaning service, we do that so that we save money. So 1 million rands, we're a small department, the chair, we have just over 180 staff here, and we're in a relatively small building, so it does go a long way, I can assure the member. So let me stop there, and the DM will pick up any questions that I've missed. Thank you.
No, thank you very much, Chair, with your permission. If I can proceed, I'll just deal with matters to do with denial that have been raised by honourable members. And maybe, Chair, built from the comments the Minister has made earlier in his introduction, action when he said this is just but an overview, there has to be an extensive engagement on each of the entities, perhaps at the time that the committee may design. I will therefore comment on DNEL with that premise in mind, hoping that that would be an acceptable proposition. First, to say that the environment in which all our state-owned companies find themselves has somewhat been impacted by a number of factors that influence the state process as we have now, not least the state capture, the performance of the economies globally, but also the real impact that COVID has made on some of them. So these are very real environmental factors that impact performance that we are looking at. Specific to DNEL, there has to be a diversification of the client base of DNEL. Presently, DNEL provides for the strategic capabilities of our defense industry, particularly at the core of it being the South African National Defense Force, which itself is experiencing budget constraints that impact the rest of all of our government, which impact on the streams of funding available for some of those capabilities that the NEL has got to keep the ability to be able to service, which impacts on cash flows that the NEL can access at a given time. But secondly, also, we have had a tendency in which DNEL got committed to orders to external markets that were confined to the Middle East, which is prone to a number of regional dynamics in terms of geopolitics that had an impact in terms of country obligations. Some of the orders had to be cancelled, which had had a dire effect on DNEL itself. Hence, the need to diversify the base of our clientele in terms of those we provide services to. The current exercise of repurposing, restructuring taking place within is aimed at exactly that. Together with the board, we are at the point of concluding what a denial of the future should look like. Obviously, that must take into account the realities as we have today. We may spend a lot more time on that when denial is the subject matter of the focus of the committee going forward. I think the Honourable Kachalia was speaking to this, asking as to some of the ammunition, etc. In the context of what I've said, we need a very holistic review of the current focus of the institution, given the financial constraints that are there. As well, Honourable Komani had spoken to the same issue. How do we anticipate saving demand? This is how I, particularly in the light of the loss of skills, we try as much, but we're really dealing with a very active market insofar as international players, some of which are poaching as far as possible. And given some of the challenges that had confronted the organization, the operational environment that is presently below 30% of the actual capacity that is there, some of the skills tend to look elsewhere for engagement, which is a natural process which must then be dealt with in the context of reorganizing and refocusing, so to speak. Chair, maybe I can leave it at that. The issue of the report on what exactly, which Honourable Clark had asked, what exactly the 1.8 billion rand for RICAP has gone into, a detailed report can be given that will dissect the areas in which the funding has gone into to be able to respond to the challenges as experienced. The other questions, Chair, that relate to those entities, I think the DG did cover as the Minister directed. I'll pause there for now. Thank you very much, Chair.
So, Chair, if I can cover some of the other issues and try to round up. On the question of Eskom, as you noted, there's been progress in relation to recovering some of the funds. The 1.5 billion is a very important step because it involves an international engineering company, and it also involves the former manager at a senior level of Eskom, who still has to be dealt with by the law enforcement agencies. So when honorable members talk about criminal actions and so on, that's not in the hands of the department. Often that is in the hands of the law enforcement agencies. And once we've done some of the reviews that we are still undertaking, we'll decide whether the department itself should lay complaints with the relevant law enforcement agency to pursue or consider pursuing some charges, because there's a lot of lying going on at the moment. So that's the first point. The second point is that on the restructuring or divisionalization process, there is indeed good progress as we've reported, but it's also a very complex process in terms of accounting, company rules, and all of those technical process, IT systems. And in essence, we are beginning to, with that process, create the foundations for an independent transmission company under Eskom's roof, although that can migrate into a different direction 10 years from now or 5 years from now. So Eskom has done extremely well in that regard. The third area, which we haven't mentioned, is the just transition. Here again, Eskom has done some very interesting work in terms of repurposing some of the old power stations, looking at the viability of putting in renewable energy plants in these old power stations that are going to be inverted commas closed in the next couple of years, and in that way contributing to lesser emissions being put out by Eskom on the one hand, and meeting the country's climate change obligations on the other hand. And there are interesting financing opportunities as well that is attached to some of the potential DFI funding that Eskom might be able to attract. The fourth is obviously the current generation issue and the load sharing issue, which a number of colleagues have raised. The fact of the matter is that this is the most difficult area as far as Eskom is concerned. We have been engaging with the Eskom board and management for many months now. To their credit, they have now appointed a new head of generation, firstly. Secondly, they are going to enforce new standards of operational conduct and rigor as far as power station operators are concerned. Thirdly, there's going to be a lot more consequence management if different performance standards are not actually met. Fourthly, we all agree that an EAF of 65% is not what is expected from Eskom. So every attempt must be made to move into the 70s and beyond the 70s as well. The next is that Eskom did require a buffer of sorts, which the emergency energy procurement was supposed to provide, but that's stuck in its own processes between NERSA on the one hand has granted some consent, and there's a process in DMRE that is evaluating offers or submissions that various interested parties have made. But Minister Mantashe and I are in touch in trying to work out how we speed up some of those issues. But the more important point equally is going to be embedded generation as we go forward. And there are some proposals under consideration. In the next couple of weeks, you'll hear a lot more about it. Once those discussions have been concluded, so that the private sector can actually contribute. And this was one of the questions that Honorable Kachalia raised to the generation side of the business. I must also compliment the distribution section of Eskom, which is very responsive to challenges that are brought to our attention. There was a question raised in relation to municipal debt, and there's some very important discussions going on between Eskom and some of its bigger debtors amongst the municipalities, and some innovative ideas are now being formulated, and we will certainly talk to both COCTA on the one hand, but be able to make some announcements in this regard in the near future as well, which will use the kind of capacity that Eskom's distribution section has more effectively to support municipalities that find themselves in difficulty. The impact of Eskom on the economy, as several colleagues have pointed out, fortunately, in the COVID period, that didn't actually materialize in any serious way, but clearly getting generation on its feet again, reducing the unplanned losses from 11 and 12,000 to a much lower figure, in fact, halving that number, is a very important short-term objective that the Eskom management is working on and needs to do better at. In that particular regard, so that as the economy grows, as the honourable members correctly pointed out, energy doesn't act as the constraint. But this will take time. So let me not create the impression that at the turn of a switch we're going to be able to solve some of these problems. But what I can certainly assure the committee on is that both the Eskom board and management are very occupied with these sorts of issues. In relation to Honorable Nkunazi's question on the Special Appropriation Act, there have been bilateral negotiations between Eskom and coal suppliers, and some ground has certainly been made in that regard. On the other hand, you know, equally important as far as primary energy is concerned is diesel, particularly given the current performance of the plant. And as you can see at the moment, those countries that rely upon oil revenue for their income and for their economies to survive, once the oil price to go beyond and closer to $60 and beyond per barrel. Currently, as I recall it yesterday, it was $57 a barrel. And that means that the cost of diesel goes up on our side, as has been announced by DMRE. In fact, it goes up at midnight tonight, I think. But there are these negotiations. What does worry Eskom is that having concluded some of these discussions, there is still, notwithstanding the assurances that they have from some of the mining companies, the challenge, as the DG has mentioned, of the quality of coal that ends up in certain power stations. So that's an issue that Eskom is applying its mind to. The issue of municipal debt, I've explained. But that's an area, you will recall, I've raised with the committee last year as well, that here we are talking about, firstly, a different compliance climate in South Africa as far as the general citizenry is concerned. Secondly, Parliament joining all the other stakeholders in persuading people not to engage in illegal connections, overusing electricity beyond the capacity that their meters would allow and substations and transformers would allow, because all of that then contributes to, on the one hand, what Eskom calls load reduction in order to save the infrastructure. And on the other hand, it can result in damage to the infrastructure as well, and then contributes to all sorts of problems in some of our communities. The maintenance plans are there. Some of them are executed well. Some of them are dependent upon contractors. So when we get the Eskom team before you, so today it wasn't the idea that each of the teams will be here to present this overview to you, as the chair pointed out. But when the team, Eskom team comes along, they can take you into much greater detail about what are the successes as far as maintenance is concerned, and what are also some of the challenges in terms particularly of the quality of work done by contractors, and what are the consequences that follow upon that, and whether some extraordinary measures need to be taken in order to improve plant performance as well. On the question of Kustile and Medupi, colleagues are right that these were the two power stations that were supposed to provide some 4,000 megawatts of uninterrupted energy. That wasn't the case. Way before our time, the Eskom management decided to become amongst the first in the world to design plants that are not custom made, so to speak. And that has resulted in all sorts of problems. Sometime earlier last year, the Eskom management negotiated with some of the original equipment suppliers and manufacturers to make adjustments. For example, the nets that are there which collapsed every 6 weeks, now they're collapsing much less. But there are also operational issues where two conveyor belts will both collapse at the same time when they shouldn't, and appropriate steps are being taken against those responsible for some of those mishaps. So I think we must accept that there were faults all over the last, I don't know how many years, since 2007. There have been cost overruns, there have been time overruns, and now there are design problems. As Honorable Dlamini, and I want to welcome him to the committee as well, just as many other colleagues did. And once the design challenges are there, part of the capital expenditure, because I think that was one of the questions that Eskom will have to engage in, is to spend some of the money on some of the adjustments that need to be made to the design in order that these units at Medupi and Kusile can in fact deliver what they are supposed to. So there are areas where good progress is being made, but again, it's a backdrop where the mishaps have already happened some time ago. So I think those were all the Eskom questions. Just let me check quickly. Right. Then on SAA, Chairperson, the one other issue which sometimes impacts on electricity supply is cable theft as well. It applies to Transnet also. This is a matter that affects PRASA, Transnet, sometimes Eskom in some areas, and other entities as well. And notwithstanding many years of decisions within government that the law enforcement agencies must get on top of that, and secondly, that some controls be placed over the export of scrap materials so that we remove the incentive for cable theft in some way, and there's some legislation on the way in that particular regard. I don't think as a country we've got on top of that, but interestingly, there might be new technologies available which will enable us to detect when and where there's interference with cables, or indeed in the case of Transnet with the fuel pipeline, in a proactive sense, so that those processes of theft can be interrupted and the culprits caught and dealt with by the normal legal processes as well. And as far as SAA is concerned, the interim board will be in place for the next few months, and it was important to have a board in place, notwithstanding the fact, and this must be repeated many, many times over so that we don't forget, that as long as SAA remains in business rescue, neither the board nor the shareholder department has any control over what happens in that airline. It's a matter that we've negotiated or discussed with the BRPs since late last year to say to them, let's create a transition process so that some matters are handed over either to the board or to the department. And the classic case before us right now is the transport of vaccines, both within South Africa, but more importantly, from elsewhere in the world to South Africa, and from South Africa to other parts of Africa as well. So we're in discussions with the BRPs that SAA's facilities and the bigger aircraft that are still owned by SAA should actually be utilized for this purpose, as I'm sure all of you would agree that our brand as a national flag carrier should be the one to bring this important commodity here, but also be able to travel across the continent to deliver that product as well. But that is still a matter for discussion. As far as the exit of the BRPs is concerned, as the DG pointed out, we've raised that on several occasions now, and that's been under discussion. I've just checked with our legal officer whether a list had been supplied of outstanding issues. Apparently there's three or four of them, and the first is what is called reconciliation, both of creditors and in relation to employees that need to be paid. Why that reconciliation has to wait until 2021, when in fact the same BRPs were being paid fees throughout 2020 to do some of that work from July, when the business rescue plan was adopted by creditors, is a mystery that somebody must resolve at some stage. I also want to point out to the committee that it was the initiative of ourselves in the department in December last year to do as much as we could to ensure that employees of SAA contrary to some of the narratives being put out there by NUMSA and company, that employees actually have some money in their pockets so that they can have a festive season with their families and have some money to spend as well. It took a long time to get this going, and regrettably, some of the money only flowed after Christmas Day, but at least late in December, many employees had some money in their pockets as well, and the unions weren't too helpful, in particular NUMSA and SACA in this particular regard, so they can't take any credit for it. They wanted to delay that matter as much as possible, and we can talk about that at some stage if need be, which I might actually come back to. So those are the reconciliation of creditors and employees, the setting up of what is called a receivership, which we've mentioned to you before, which is, let's say, a provision which enables the BRPs to leave for SAA to get out of business rescue. But if there are outstanding monies to be paid to any particular entity, then those monies are paid by this receivership, which has to be approved by the creditors themselves. So that's another one of the things that needs to be agreed upon as we go forward. On the question of fees, we don't control, and I think it's a valid question that is raised, but we've given you this answer before, that the BRPs are their own bosses, that in terms of the Companies Act, they have nobody but the court to report to, but they will only report to the court when they conclude their work and when they sign off and say that all of the conditions have been met for the business to come out of business rescue. We certainly agree with Honorable Shabalala, and we are in discussion with DTI that the Companies Act must be amended as far as SOEs are concerned, and perhaps commercial businesses as well, to ensure that BRPs do have some accountability for what monies they take, for how they spend that money, and how they account for that money as well. They can't be free agents that have total autonomy in this particular regard. I'm just trying to see what other questions there were. Honorable Kachalia asked the question about 10.5 plus the 3.5 over the next few years to pay off, for example, the lessors. How will that be done? Those will be normal applications to the Treasury budget processes. But I want to also give the assurance to the committee that even in respect of the 10.5, I've given instructions that as much money as possible must be saved, so that we can actually redirect that money to a better cause if that is actually required. On the question of the SEPs and the shortlist, these are commercial processes, just like you've come across this with coal suppliers to Eskom. We can't give any details at this point in time because the state then loses its competitive advantage in terms of any negotiations that it might want to enter into with one or other of these SEPs. There was a transaction advisor that was appointed, as you were aware, last year to process all of these offers that we've actually had. We do have a short list that they have actually produced. The board will be provided with that short list, and we are due to meet in the next 24 or 48 hours to conclude how we process those particular issues as well. So once we have the final numbers, honorable members, on the cost of the BRPs, we'll certainly make that available. But I'm sure in due course, you would want to call the BRPs yourselves to ask them to account to you for the period they've been in charge of SAA. And we'll give you our version at that particular point in time. So what else is there? Yeah, I think Honorable Malinga made references to the voluntary severance packages being paid on time. They should have been paid much earlier, in our view, as a department, because the money was there to begin the payments. so that employees weren't left in the kind of position that they eventually found themselves in. And it is definitely not the intent of government to place additional hardships, Honorable Komane, on anybody. But as I've pointed out repeatedly, and the DG has pointed out as well, we only have so much of leverage in this regard. And it's very regrettable that when it suits NUMSA, they're quite willing to sit and negotiate. For example, in the labor forum that was created last year, on which you've had reports from us, and when it suits them, they go on these tirades in the public domain. Whilst they know the truth, they don't mind actually twisting that truth in order to suit whatever political intent they actually have. And we will continue to do what we can, both in the best interest of the country and SAA on the one hand, and be as humane as is possible, as is demonstrated in the fact that we've put a social plan in place for SAA employees to support the employees themselves. Finally, on the question of Transnet, I think the DG pointed out very well that we have a stable situation as far as Transnet is concerned. Some of the difficulties that they had during the COVID period have been overcome. The congestion that was experienced at the Durban port has also been overcome as a result of some reorganizing that has actually happened. What is important now is that we've created good lines of communication between different stakeholders and ourselves, but also different stakeholders and the Transnet management. And the CEO is on record at a webinar yesterday giving that commitment as well. And there is a new perspective and strategy being developed, which we'll brief you on as soon as the process has been concluded, which will be very exciting as far as Durban Port is concerned and how it is to be become the hub of ports in South Africa, but also do we expedite both imports and exports in a way in which it is supportive of the economy. It is still the policy of government, and Transnet has to do more in this particular regard to take any haulage from the roads and transfer them to trains. And the train is definitely cheaper than traveling by road. But once those efficiencies are attained, as far as Transnet freight is concerned, we can certainly begin to move in that particular direction. I don't think that there's any crumbling infrastructure, but there are certainly infrastructure issues that need to be resolved, particularly in the Durban-Joburg line, where there were difficulties in respect of one of the lines. But we'll update you once Transnet appears before you in that particular regard. The pipeline issues have become a lot more secure than they have been in the past. And I think we are all at one and in agreement, Chairperson, that we need to get as much of the cargo traffic out of the roads and onto rail as is possible. And 2021 should actually become the critical year in which that switch is actually made. For example, in this particular regard, you will be aware that yesterday there was the launch of the 16 billion rand investment by Ford Motors in a plant near, just out on the eastern side of Pretoria. Now, Transnet is very much part of this project. I'll be meeting with the senior person from Ford tomorrow to have further discussions with them on how Transnet could be of assistance. But once those logistics are in place, Ford will become a major exporter, manufacturer in South Africa, and exporter of certain types of vehicles to both Africa and other parts of the world as well. So there again, I think Transnet has a critical role to play to support the key industries in South Africa, both mining and automotive in the first instance, but others as well. So once we have that strategy organized, you will see that Transnet can go from strength to strength. It is also the intent, and this is being looked into at the moment, to enter into partnerships with the private sector of one kind or another, depending on what we're talking about, whether it's rail or port or parts of the terminals. And in the next few months, that will become clearer as well as the kind of direction that we want to move in. So all in all, Chair, whilst we have some difficulties with some of the entities concerned, as the Deputy Minister pointed out, I think Danel can be put onto a new road, and he indicated some of the changes that the Danel Board wants to make, and we will certainly support them in that regard. But those changes are serious. It requires strong leadership to actually lead that particular process. CEFCOL is reasonably stable, and it needs to grow from strength to strength. Alexco is an entity that requires a complete relook in order to see how we can best utilize what it actually has to offer and the kind of mining rights that it actually has at this particular point in time. And some private sector partnership might have to be considered in that regard as well. Eskom is on a new road, both in terms of its restructuring, but also in terms of its operation as well. And Transnet, as I said, has an exciting future, both in relation to bringing in private sector participants in some of the infrastructure projects, and in some of the operations as well, but also in terms of the kind of new direction that it wants to go. So thank you very much for all of your questions and interactions, and we'll work with you to go into more detailed presentations as we go into the rest of the year. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Minister. Thank you, DG Deputy Minister. Now, honourable members, there is a strong hand that is coming from Honourable Shabalala, though my time is almost over. Can I quickly go to Honourable Shabalala?
Yes, Chairperson. Thank you so much, and thank you to the Minister for the response. Look, Chair, I think one has moved a motion, if not a matter for consideration by the Portfolio Committee, that says that let's write to the Speaker and just seek an advice, legal advice around the issue of tabling of financial state, of the tabling of the statements. So I just feel that we need to take a decision around that. Thank you.
Sorry, thank you, Honourable Shabalala. Honourable Kajalia.
Thank you, Chair. With regard to the letter to the Speaker, I just need to clarify that this committee and its predecessors have been addressing the issues for a very long time, many years, about the inability of SOEs to produce timely financial statements. Many requests have been made, many letters have been written, and many years down the line, we are in the same position. That was the motivation for a non-controversial private members bill to make sure that SOEs produce financial statements timeously. I would have hoped that this committee would consider that favorably. Thank you.
Okay, honorable members, do you have a follow-up, Honorable Shabalala?
No, Chair, it's safe to say that we hear what Honourable Katela is saying. We are not saying that we don't want accountability. Whether historically this portfolio committee has been trying to do that, we're in the sixth administration. And I think it's only fair that we exhaust avenue and we have not really tested. So it's only fair that we write to the speaker and we allow ourselves to engage in a process, besides us just immediately going to the private. Like we said, private members feel it's upon a member to do so. So it's not something necessarily that needs our okay or not. What we are tabling right now is that, can we consider that and take a decision? Perhaps we must just call for other members to hear what their views are, whether they support or they don't. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Honourable members, what is your views? Can any other member speak? But I just want to indicate that since we came in this sixth parliament, we didn't have a situation where there was a resistance of presenting financial report without any reasons. There were reasons that you all are aware of insofar as these entities that have been unable to. For example, SAA is undergoing the process that is in now. Now, I'm not sure what informs the suggestion that is taking this particular route. But I'm open for members to come and engage here.
Chair, my hand is
up. Yes. Let's start with you, Komane.
Thank you very much, Chair. One would just maybe want to note that we should not be a committee that is just stamping or just looking at things. So my view on this matter would then be, we need a legal opinion onto how the committee should go about in the instances when the departments or state-owned entities does not submit the required information within the stipulated time. So if us writing to the speaker for a legal opinion is the way that would enhance this the committee to hold the SOEs and the departments accountable, so be it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Komani. I saw Honorable Mkwana's hand. It's not, if you will draw the hand. Honorable Mkwana.
Chairperson, if I may come in, is a matter for the committee to determine. So can you excuse us, please? And thank you very much for that.
Okay. All other members, invited guests, we can release them, Honorable Minister.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your comprehensive presentation with the department. On behalf of the committee, we thank you. Release you.
Thank you.
Kwanazi?
Thanks, Chair. I don't know what is happening with my gadget when I want to speak. I'm sorry about that. Chairperson, my view on this matter is that can I persuade the members? I understand what Honorable Shabalala is saying, and I fully support the motion. But before that, can I pursue Honorable members? Maybe I need to be advised before a support or deal with it, to say, can we explore a PMF act processes, because I think it is specified on how to table that report and going forward. Can I maybe get a space to be advised on that, or maybe before pursuing other routes? Of course, what is tabled by the motion tabled by Honorable Shabalala, I think it really needs to be considered. But Chairperson, can I also be assisted before that with the PMF processes there? Thanks, Chair.
Okay. Who else want to speak?
Chairperson, committee secretary.
Yes, yes. Come in.
Thank you, Chairperson. I thought maybe it's important for me to just bring to the attention of the committee the sections within the PFMA that provides for all entities and departments of the state to table their annual report. Section 65.2A of the PFMA requires that a minister who fails to table an annual report for an entity within 6 months, which is by the 30th of September of the financial year, must table a written explanation to the speaker and the reasons why the report was not tabled. And that is what has informed why the minister and the Department of Public Enterprise and its entities have not. Those letters get tabled in the ATC and published for all portfolio committees which are affected. And then there's also the National Treasury regulations that deals with the guidelines for legislative oversight through annual reports. I will try and send them to members of the committee to see in terms of where the National Treasury actually guides, give us a guideline in terms of how do we use table, what happens when a department or an entity does not table its annual reports within the time frame, and what is that the portfolio committees need to do in that particular regard. However, it is still within the committee's right to take a decision in terms of the legal opinion.
Okay. That's the advice from the secretary, honorable members. I think the suggestion by Chabalala that we seek legal advice from the speaker so that we move on this with a clear understanding as what is expected from us. Honorable Kashalia, your hands seem to be up.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to, for clarity, following on what the Secretary has read out, I want to just read what the amendment proposed says. It says that the amendment of the Act be as amended is hereby amended by the substitution of the following paragraph, that the executive authority must table a written explanation in the legislature setting out the reasons why they were not tabled, and table such annual report, financial statements, and an audit report on the statements within 60 days after the tabling of a written explanation. So all that says is that the written explanation, after the written explanation, they must table it within 60 days. Now that is the crux of the matter and will go a long way to achieving what we want to see in terms of information so that we can discuss, debate, and assist. Thank you.
Okay. I hope we that doesn't conflict. It's not in conflict with the proposal to write to the speaker so that we are provided with that particular legal advice. And the seemingly majority of the members that have spoken seem to be agreeing that let's seek that legal advice. Am I concluding this discussion properly, honorable members?
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Yeah. Secretary, that is the way forward. The way forward is that we'll be writing a letter to the speaker seeking a legal advice based on this non-compliance by these entities. You got us. Thank you. Honorable members. Okay. Honorable members, Let's quickly go to the minutes of the previous meeting. I know we are already on injury time. Can we quickly go to the minutes of the previous meeting? Secretary?
Chairperson, I'm here.
Yeah, we are on the minute now. Né?
I'm on the minute of the 26th of January 2021. I'm not going to fly them because they only speak of adoption of minutes. Yes, basically, this is a meeting where the members were adopting minutes and the draft program for 2021 first term. The minutes that were adopted was basically the minutes of the 8th of July, 11th of November 2020, 20 May 2020, 17 June 2020, 6 May 2020, 27 May 2020, 25 November 2020, 2 June 2020, 4 November 2020, 24 June 2020, 10 June 2020, 15 July 2020, 3 June 2020, 19 August 2020, 2nd of September 2020, 18th of November 2020, 25 August 2020. And we also considered the first term program, and some of the issues that were added by the committee was basically to amend the presentation that we received today regarding the issue of the work of the business rescue practitioners for SAA and Express Airways, and then on the meeting of ESCOM that we are going to get next week, that they also include the issue of load sharing, and also that we, the committee must also ensure that they apply for its oversight visit to Alexco as agreed. That was in the main, the minutes for 26 January 2021.
Are you done?
I'm done, Chair.
Okay. Honorable members, those are the minutes of the previous meeting. Can we adopt the minutes?
Chairperson?
Honorable Shabalala?
Thank you. It's Honorable Jay Chabalala. I move for the adoption of the minutes as raised and read by the Secretary of the Committee. Thank you.
Yes, Honorable Julie Shabalala has adopted the proposed adoption of the minutes. Then, seconder?
I second, Chair, Honorable Mkwanazi. Thank you.
Honorable Mkwanazi, Honorable Jabu Mkwanazi accepted the, seconded the minutes. That's the end of our meeting, Honorable Members. Thank you very much. For this long but a good meeting.